Warning, the following program may be too truthful for some liberals. Listener discretion is therefore advised.
And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. One radio show where we still cling to our guns and religion. We have a very special show today. We have Mr. Paul Ire with us. Paul is one of the veterans of the eligibility battle. He comes to us today from New York, where he has some very important information to share with us why Barack Obama's long-form birth certificate can't possibly be legit. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing good. You are one of the veterans of the eligibility battle. You've been around since day one of this horrible travesty that has been thrust upon the American people. Tell us a little bit about you, because this is your very first time on our show, and I know most of our listeners have heard of you, are aware of your work, but some may not be. So just give us a little background to start off.
Okay. I guess I started out my career in Manhattan when I went to work for Hearst Publishing in December of 1959. I was on the art staff of the American Druggist, a trade journal. After that, I worked for a number of ad agencies in Manhattan, one notably down in Puerto Rico, returned to Manhattan, and eventually by 1968, I opened my own business in New Jersey called Bergen Graphics. We did retail accounts and things like the Montgomery Ward weekly ads. We did those nationwide. Hmm. But we also did the Hearst Blue Books, motor repair manuals that you find in all the garages, and how to repair any car, make, model, year. And a lot of supermarket accounts, retail stuff. Eventually, I built the company up to 60 people. We were running on three shifts. And I have to say, as a company that sold typography, we did a lot of examining of documents. Everything that we sold had to be perfect, or we'd be out of business. So we had proofreaders. And as the president of the company, I directed and set up the systems and methods for all the workers, and did a lot of proofreading myself. So when we sold type to somebody like the Montgomery Ward catalog, it had to be perfect. We couldn't make mistakes, so we did a lot of proofreading of our work. We did this with Xeroxes, of course. Everybody used Xeroxes. Nobody would send the original mechanical. In those days, it was paste-up mechanicals. So I was very familiar with what I could ascertain from a Xerox, as opposed to having an original. And, of course, we never got an original of the Obama birth certificate to examine. But early in 2011, after the birth certificate, I believe it was around August, Orly took Gloke and I to Honolulu, because she had a subpoena to examine the original. We were prepared to examine the original, but it wasn't allowed, claiming right to privacy, even though the whole world had seen a copy of it. The district attorney came out and told Orly that she couldn't be allowed in to see the document because of privacy rights. So we went home disappointed. While we were there, we looked up the Sunohara family on the contention that the birth certificate number had to have been stolen from another person, probably born around the same time that Obama was alleged to have been born in Honolulu. And we found that most likely they did use Virginia Sunohara's birth certificate. She died a day after she was born in a hospital outside of Honolulu, and then they took her to Kapiʻani because she had respiratory problems. She died, and we believe that they used her number we've never been allowed to see her long form birth certificate, even though the Duncan family took the Department of Health in Honolulu to court.
Okay, hang on a second. You said the Duncan family. You mean Duncan Sunohara, her brother?
I mean, yeah, Duncan, the Sunohara family. We mostly dealt with him. Doug did all the talking and called him frequently and finally persuaded him to go into the Department of Health and first ask for the short form. Well, the number on the short form was out of sequence. It was like a number that had to have occurred a few weeks later. So we're guessing they just picked another dead baby because Alvin Onaka, the registrar of births, had to know when Duncan Sunohara came in and asked for a copy of the short form that they couldn't put the correct number. They had to go get a number somewhere, and he probably just went to, you know, because all they do with that is type up something and give it to you, a certificate that they're supposed to be reading the original document.
Paul,
so then he went in and asked.
Paul, give me one second. A lot of people will point to the two birth announcements in the local Hawaiian papers as proof
that something
must have been put on file with the Hawaiian Department of Health.
Mike Sulu went there pretty well established that it was a common practice for the health department to accept forms claiming home births, and then they'd make a notation in their files. So they had something, and the notation would lead to the newspaper announcements.
Yes.
The notation probably was submitted by the grandparents because they said they would have said the baby's born in our home, but Honolulu never went out, didn't have the resources to check home births. So apparently there was a regular thing going where Japanese citizens, for example, would claim that their baby was born in Honolulu, but the baby wasn't, and then fly into Honolulu with the baby and get their anchor baby certified with the birth.
I'm familiar with that, but my point is that if they did register an unattended birth, that would generate...
automatically generate the newspaper ads.
Well,
absolutely.
It would generate the newspaper numbers, but it would also be a registration that would have a number associated with it. So why would they need to steal Virginia Sunohara's number if they registered an unattended birth? Because wouldn't that generate a long...
Because they didn't assign a number to it because... the family never came in and requested a birth certificate. They wanted to leave the issue alone. I believe the grandmother just knew the baby was born in Kenya, got the phone call, and wanted to plant that so that in the future they could claim that Obama was born in Honolulu instead of Kenya.
So you're
a normal thing.
So you're saying if somebody had registered an unattended birth, that would not generate a long form with the appropriate number?
It wouldn't generate a long form. It wouldn't even generate a short form. There'd be merely a notation made in the file that a claim of a home birth was made for Barack Obama Jr.
Okay, so perhaps whenever Governor Abercrombie said, I found a record of the birth.
Yeah,
maybe that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. And didn't find anything else, and he should have.
Now, I want to ask you about one thing. I personally, you know, there are about five different flavors of what the left likes to call a birther. I mean, and only one of them has to do with where Barack Obama himself was born. One of them has to do with where his father was born. And I tend to fall into the category of, I don't care where he was born. His birth certificate has been altered. Altering a birth certificate is a felony, and a felony disqualifies one from being president of the United States.
Yes.
So you said... born in Kenya. What proof is there that he was born in Kenya? Because I frankly haven't seen any proof he was born in Kenya.
I like the story told by Dreams from My Real Father on the DVD that contends that Stanley Dunham, the grandfather of Obama, worked indeed for the CIA, and that's why he was in Seattle, Mercer Island, was to counter spy on the communist spies that were attempting to get the B-52 plans. And then he went to, they sent him to Hawaii to meet, we have a picture of Stanley meeting Obama Sr. when he flew in from Kenya to start college. And that was part of a CIA program where we were contradicting the Patrice Lumumba school in Moscow that they invited African leaders or Africans to study there and then go back to Africa and represent the Communist Party. Mm-hmm. So Barack Sr. was supposed to represent an infiltrated communist in Kenya, actually, and continue working with the CIA, who paid for his education. And, of course, after Harvard, he returned, as he had to, because he never was a citizen. He was just a student, a foreign student in this country, both in Hawaii and in Harvard. And there was a fake marriage arranged to protect the real father's identity that was Frank Marshall Davis.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of evidence for that. It's pretty hard to contradict it at this point, that Frank Marshall Davis is the real father of Obama, who was a Moscow-controlled communist, escaped to Hawaii after the House Un-American Activities Committee had called him down and they were putting pressure on him when he did originally work as a journalist in Chicago. So the CIA father didn't want, when she got pregnant by Frank Marshall Davis, because he brought Frank Marshall Davis into his home and he met the daughter, and the daughter met him on the side, took these photographs, the nude photographs that we've all seen, that were published in the New York Magazine in the early 60s. And it's pretty well proven that those pictures are Stanley Ann Dunham wearing Frank Marshall Davis's wife's shoes and being in Frank Marshall Davis's home for the photographs. And it was around Christmas. There were decorations around and on the wall indicating the time. And then 9 months later, she has a baby, but they had to have a claim of who the father would have been. Had to be another. The only black student University of Honolulu was in Stanley and Neil Abercrombie's Russian language class at their University of Honolulu, so they all knew each other. But that arrangement is why then Stanley said, you can't be born, your baby can't be born in this country because it's half black, and my boss, the CIA, will know that my daughter has cohabitated with the man I'm spying on. So go down to Kenya and meet him, because it's now summer break, and have the baby there. So we feel he ordered her to go to Kenya to have the baby so the CIA wouldn't learn of it and only leave a notation in the files in Honolulu in the case in the future he wanted to become an American citizen, he had something to go to.
So why did why would Barack Obama Sr. go along with this? He
got the visa advantage that he was able to stay in the country longer because he married an American citizen.
So a deal
was made because Stanley knew him already.
Yeah.
We have a photograph of him at the airport when Brock arrived in Miami. In Honolulu. At that time, Stanley was serving CIA in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And they reassigned him to Honolulu to investigate and spy on Frank Marshall Davis. And that's why he was in Hawaii.
Now, I will have to admit the relationship that developed between Frank Marshall Davis and Stanley Dunham, who was a furniture salesman, supposedly, would be a rather strange one to explain. How did this communist journalist and this furniture salesman become drinking buddies? Now let's go back for a second to Barack Obama Sr. You said that he was part of a CIA program where they brought people over from, young men over from Kenya to counter a similar program.
The Tree Flamumba School in Moscow.
Okay.
The CIA set this up to counter the agents that Moscow would send back to Africa, and that we had our people too.
Well, now if Barack Obama Sr. was involved with the CIA, didn't Frank Marshall Davis risk the CIA finding out by going to another CIA operative to help him cover the pregnancy?
Well, he kept the secret for him. He wasn't an operative. He was just a student at the time, getting a free education, who went back to Africa. I think it's a reasonable supposition. The evidence that she was in his house getting the photographs taken is pretty clear. It was her, Snopes tried to contradict it, but they threw that out. It was ridiculous.
I love the Snopes argument that it was actually this other well-known
model. She didn't look at all like Stanley.
No, I've looked at them. And I can honestly say that even though they don't give a certificate of expertise for this, as someone who has studied the female figure for 50 years almost, I can tell you, just based on cup size alone, that the woman...
Yes, cup size, for sure. It wasn't her.
The woman that Snopes said was in those Frank Marshall Davis the photographs most certainly was not. I mean, she had about five times the cleavage that Stanley and Dunham has. And I found it interesting once that I used a facial recognition program, and I pointed it at one of those nude photos of, you know, from Frank Marshall Davis's porn collection, and it actually brought up Stanley Ann Dunham's high school yearbook picture. So I don't think there's any question that there was something going on between Frank Marshall Davis and Stanley Ann Dunham.
He's the real father.
Well, and he's also a pervert. I mean, let's point this out. This is a guy who wrote a book called Sex Rebel. In it, the lead character has sex with underage people, and then he admitted afterwards that the book was largely autobiographical, meaning that essentially he had sex with underage minors. So this guy's a pervert. He's a sleazebag. And, you know, the other thing about him that I find really interesting is that he was, as you know from reading Paul Kilgore's book, he was a card-carrying member of Communist Party USA, and he mentored Barack Obama from age 9 to age 18, supposedly. Now, if Sarah Palin had been mentored by a known fascist or by a member of the Klan from age 9 to 19 or 9 to 18, you can bet your butt that the mainstream media would be interested. But here's a guy who's so high up on the Communist Party USA list that the FBI kept that if America had ever gone to war with Russia, Frank Marshall Davis would have been picked up within 24 hours. Yeah. That's how high level he was. He had access to Barack Obama and mentored him from age 9 to 18. And furthermore, there is no one in Dreams from My Father that is referenced more than Frank, who we now know as Frank Marshall Davis. And even though the book is called Dreams from My Father, Barack Obama referenced him many more, referenced Frank Marshall Davis many more times than he referenced Barack Obama Sr. So it's amazing to me that the mainstream media doesn't care that Barack Obama was mentored by a communist. I mean, whether he was Barack Obama's biological father or not, even if you just said this is some friendly old communist guy who lived down the street and you don't know about the photographs and the pictures of Stanley Ann in Frank Marshall's home, even if you don't know about all that stuff, this relationship between Obama and a high-level card-carrying member of Communist Party USA should have been brought out during the 2008 election. It should have been brought out, but it wasn't. And that's because half the people in our media are communists anyway. You know, frankly, we look back at Joseph McCarthy and, you know, people criticize him. Frankly, I think the world owes him an apology because Hollywood was crawling with communists then and it's crawling with communists now. I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but let me ask you this because this is your area of expertise. I think you've done a great job of establishing your expertise as a typesetter. I mean, anybody who was trusted to print the blue books, anybody who was trusted to do advertising work for major supermarket chains for Christ's sake, Montgomery Ward catalog, knew what the hell they were doing from a typesetting standpoint. So it's April 27th. 2011, Obama finally releases his purported long-form birth certificate to the world via an electronic copy, a PDF file posted at whitehouse.gov. You're a typesetter. You get this thing. You print it out. You look at it. What are your first thoughts, Paul?
Well, it was impossible. My experience started in the Air Force when I was trained as a clerk typist at Scott Air Force Base, and had an overseas assignment where I worked with three different typewriters, and then came down to the National Security Agency at Fort Meade, Maryland, where I had to have a top secret clearance, not because of any involvement I had personally with secrets, but the fact that I had to type things that were regarded as secret. But what I was very familiar with for the 4 years of my typing experience for the Air Force was exactly what a typewriter could and could not do when typing a form, because I never typed letters. All I typed was forms, and I was very familiar with how that worked out, how I would type a form. Forms were always designed in those days to match with a typewriter. So that if you pull the carriage return, go ahead.
Paul, hang on. Real quick, when Carl Denninger was on my show, and he's a guy that's been fascinated with typewriters since he was in high school, and he would tear them apart, put them back together. One of the things he pointed out, and you're certainly verifying for us here today, is people forget that at one time, typing was a profession. Really good typist was worth their weight in gold to a large corporation or to the military or to anyone who
it was the only game in town.
It was the only game in town, and it was actually a skill. It was a profession. So someone like yourself really knew the ins and outs of a typewriter and, as you said, what it could do, what it couldn't do. So here you are, not only an expert typesetter, but an expert typist as well, enough so that you're trusted to type top-secret documents for the government. This abomination of a birth certificate comes out on April 27, 2011. You look at it, and what jumps out at you?
Well, the first thing, I was looking at the word student, and I noticed that the two T's were different. A different shape, different design, slightly different size, and I knew that couldn't be. I'd never typed anything like that, where within the same word, the shape of a T would change. And I thought, this indicates,
Paul, let's tell our listeners that when you look at the website, teapartypowerhour.com, or if you go to markgillard.com, which is where the Blog Talk archives is, we're going to have links to a document that is a report that was put out by you, and people can actually follow along in this by going to that and linking. It's not up as we're taping, but it will be up by the time this airs. So I would encourage everybody, rather than try to visualize this stuff, actually
get it up on the screen.
Yeah, dig it up on the screen and look at it as Paul is talking about it. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Paul.
The first thing I'd want them to look at that I did later was an ad I prepared, a full-page newspaper ad I prepared to go in the New York, in the Washington Times, and they gladly accepted it and printed it, I think, three times, once in their weekly edition and twice in their daily editions. So probably a few hundred thousand people across the country got to see it, because it's a paper distributed by mail throughout the country, especially the weekly edition. And I never got back any response from anybody who said, well, this thing you presented is wrong. Because, of course, I'm running it in a newspaper. I'm not running it in an ad that the Ombudsman planning to attack and try to invent confusion and reasons why I'm wrong about everything.
Well, the Obots are really interesting because, first of all, I can tell you, as someone who's rubbed elbows with a lot of the computer experts, they don't have answers for a lot of the questions that have been raised.
No.
And all of it seems to fall back on one thing, is that they all seem to think that Barack Obama has some kind of a magic scanner. I know that whenever you were on an Obot show, that is, frankly, it's not even something I'm going to plug on my show. I don't even want to mention the name. That's how I feel about it. But whenever you were on an Obot show, they had some girl that was a scripted caller call up and say, well, do you know what kind of scanner they use?
Yeah, I got that
their
call.
Their whole theory revolves around the fact that Barack Obama has some kind of a magic scanner that nobody's ever seen before and nobody has seen since. It's locked up in a vault at the White House, and, you know, only Obama's scanner creates these types of anomalies. And what I can tell you, Paul, and I'm not going to mention the person's name just yet, but I did speak to a prior White House webmaster. This particular person did not post the Obama birth certificate because this particular person was no longer there. They worked for a Republican administration. But what that person told me is that they used commonly available commercial scanners, you know, available to the public, and they use the same software that everybody else used. So this idea that Obama's got this multi-million dollar special scanner that us plain folk don't know about is pure BS, and I verified that through a former White House webmaster.
Obama's make claims, but they never support it with their own assembly of evidence, like I've done. Moving into what actually the best... Go ahead.
Yeah, up on my screen. I would encourage everybody else. We're going to post the Washington Times ad as well.
Yeah, we'll look at that first.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
Point one on that document shows a group of letters that were all taken from the same birth certificate, and I put them next to each other to illustrate their differences. The first are two lowercase a's. One is obviously taller than the other.
Mm-hmm.
The next is two lowercase e's. One is rotated and italicized, or it's just completely different. It's a different size, and it's a different shape. But these two were on the same document. The cap E's have obvious differences. The sixes, the L's, the next line, the cap A's, you see one cap A that's much larger. In the middle, the lowercase N's, the two of them, obviously are from different type families. We think that Pika and Elite was mixed. In order to do this forgery, early in 2011, the forger working on a Macintosh had to get direct scans of birth certificates from Capliani from 1961, given to her probably by Alvin Onaka in the Department of Health. And then this forger working on a Macintosh would have had an assembly of letters were intended to be used to make up the typed portion of the birth certificate. They didn't have a typewriter, and they didn't want to use a typewriter or type from a typewriter that wasn't Capliani because people might pick up on that and say, we see forensic similarities to the type used on the Obama birth certificate to type used at the time at Capliani in their typewriters. But that was as far as they went trying to duplicate. It didn't work, of course, because they pasted most of those words up by eye, letter by letter. And what would you expect to happen? First, you'd never expect the distances between the letters to go anywhere near matching what you get from a typewriter. For example, the lowercase a followed by the lowercase n occurs six times on the Obama birth certificate. And the space between those the lowercase a and the lowercase n differs each time. And one would say, well, that can't be because those days the typewriters were all monospaced, meaning, as most people know, you'd type a letter and then the carriage would move. If it was Elite, the typewriter style used in the at the time at Capliani, it would move 6 points. Well, that's all the carriage return was capable of doing, was moving over 6 points to the next stop. So the distances between the A and N should be exactly the same in every occurrence of the two letters type.
Paul,
go ahead.
Paul, let me throw a Obot clown argument out at you.
Go ahead.
They say that this is caused by speed typing.
No. You type fast as you want. Actually, their best argument is that the typewriter was mechanically flawed, and that's why the letter spacing was uneven, and ignore the part that I brought in, that's going to be in the next exhibit we'll bring up, where I point out that all the two-letter combinations that are in the Obama birth certificate vary, except when we come to type letters that are part of a whole word that might have been picked, was capable of being picked up in one piece. In other words, the forger's got this assembly of letters, has to paste up the whole document letter by letter. What's she going to do when she comes to having to create the word Honolulu or Oahu She's not, he or she is not going to go to individually put those letters together, because on the documents that were scanned, the forger was given whole words also. So it would be natural to pick the whole words. And I show in the next exhibit that the whole words, like Honolulu, Oahu, their spacing is perfectly the same, and in fact occur in the same spacing with all the birth certificates you see coming from Honolulu.
And Paul, real
so
quick, I noticed
it didn't get better. Go ahead.
I noticed that you keep saying she. Now, when someone doesn't know gender, typically we fall back on a male
pronoun.
It's going to
be either a male or a female, yes.
Right, but you said she, which tells me that you think you know who the forger might be. Am I correct?
You're correct.
Okay.
The reason we don't want to tip off that person is so that that person won't go and clear their hard drive, realizing that they're under suspicion,
okay.
Which that's probably been done already. But we know, you know, right off, we were told, that's what I say, we, I'm talking about Doug and I, that there was inside information in the Honolulu Department of Health that there was no document on file, an informer said. And then later the informer calls and says, now there is a document on file. That would have been in the spring of 2011.
And you would think a certified document examiner could rip that to shreds, though, based on the paper.
Well, we're never going to see the original. The original is a computer printout. That's why they can't show it to us. And those space differences and all the other problems are not going to go away just because they were show the original. They can't show the original. They don't have an original. They got a printout from the forger, put it in the file, and made a scan to post online and made two copies to send to the White House.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say, I found it interesting that Abercrombie, I think one time I mistakenly said he looked for it for 6 months, but he did look for it for a couple of months, and he couldn't find it, but then Dr. Pacino supposedly walks in, and there it is, you know, a couple of weeks before Obama released it to the world. And, of course, when Dr. Facchino was interviewed, she said it was half written and it was half typed.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to be a certified document examiner to look at it and see that it's not half written and half typed. So you would think if we had a mainstream media that had any interest in pursuing the truth, they would have gone back to Dr. Facchino and said, you know, Dr. Facchino, you're quoted as saying that this document is half written and half typed. 2.5 weeks or whatever the time period is after you said that, the document was released on April 27th, and it wasn't half written and half typed. Now, why is it that what you described isn't what Barack Obama released? If it were George Bush, Sarah Palin, you know, Ronald Reagan, pick your favorite Republican, they would have gone after that in a heartbeat, but because it was Barack Obama, the media just ignored it.
This is a good opportunity for me to jump in and explain why I'm here in the first place.
Okay.
In 2002, I lived in Manhattan and on a ground floor apartment. And a friend of mine that would frequently pass my apartment on his way to work was an editor at a major media outlet in Manhattan. And at one point, he confessed to me that he was required to file a Daily Wire on any contentious story. And he filed a wire with an office in Washington that he did not name and said that he'd get an answer on whether or not he could run with the story. And I said, well, if they tell you you can't run with the story, do you have any backup or recourse to appeal why you can't run the story? And his eyes widened. And he said, are you kidding? We're afraid for our lives. And I said, who threatens you? He said, the U.S. Army, just like in World War II. In 1947, that process was reestablished by Harry Truman when he created the CIA. Apparently there's a connection, because the CIA seems to have the overview that may be the office that really does the censorship. There's one central office and it has to be big. in Washington has to do this. And when the when an executive in Qatar, an executive of Al Jazeera, made a statement from Qatar that he was told by the FCC that in order to get a license to run media from the USA, and Qatar was attempting to do that, and they're still going to do it, they were told by the FCC that if they got a license, they would have to follow the guidelines presented by the CIA on how to present the news in America, which kind of confirmed what I'd suspected that my friend was talking about. What office in Washington could handle something that huge and still cover it up? They'd have to be involved in secrecy. By the way, there's two brand new buildings at McLean, black, tall, that appear to double the office space at McLean that we haven't heard a word about. That's all right. They're supposed to keep everything secret. Let them keep everything secret.
Well, but, all I can say is that if your sources are shooting straight with you and this is the case, the Internet must be driving them frickin' crazy.
Yeah, but see, after I became aware that the media was censored, I mean fully censored on a daily basis, only the editors are in on this, not the reporters. The reporter comes in with her story, hey, can we run this, chief? And he says, I'll get back to you. And then he files wire to Washington. He gets the disapproval. He's the one who has to explain to the reporter why the people upstairs, principally the owners, feel that this is the good story to run, and blah, 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 and it doesn't run. But that's how the censorship is accomplished in America today, through the editors. Every editor is fully aware that he has to file and wait for approval of every story. And we know this is the case. 60% of America doesn't believe the media.
Do they even have 40% believing them now?
I don't think they, not really. Just most people just don't understand what's going on because they're not prepared to accept the fact that the government itself controls the media in the interest of national security so that we won't have riots and people getting upset over things like an illegal has been put in the presidency. I don't think everybody knew that until later. And then I had a friend who worked for an agency in Washington mm-hmm. that was visiting me because he was from New York, and he was visiting me in New York City, and we were talking about short form at that time, 2008, and he and I both liked Obama, thought it would be good for America to have a black president. But I said, you know, there's some contention that the short form we're looking at is not real. It might be a forgery. And, of course, now we have a certified forensic examiner willing to agree to that was a forgery too. But my friend said, no, you're wrong. And I said, well, what about Secret Service? They're supposed to vet. He says, well, I have a personal friend over there. When I get back to Washington, he's a drinking buddy. We'll go out and talk about it. He answers me back by email. Well, I found out the truth about Obama's birth certificate. This is a highly connected guy, and so is the person he's talking to. Says, but I can't tell you. Then on his Facebook, he starts bashing Obama. Then about 2 months later, he sends me an email. If the world knew the truth about Obama's birth certificate, it would turn upside down. So I came to the conclusion that he had gotten some inside information that Washington knew that he didn't really have a birth certificate. And then the issue came up, and he released the new one. I went after it like a tiger because I said, hell, this has to be a forgery. So it's going to be easy to find things. And it was. The amazing thing is that in spite of all the evidence, media won't look at it, won't touch it, because, of course, the Daily Wire won't allow them to print any such stories. Even though my evidence appeared all over the Washington Times, editorially they never referred to it, nor did the Washington Post, their competitor, ever refer to it, nor did anybody else in American media refer to that evidence, which is very strong.
What I can tell you, Paul, is that a lot of people have said, well, why doesn't Sheriff Arpaio bring this to a member of Congress? He and his people tried for 6 months.
Yeah,
Paul,
Congress won't do it.
Yeah, and here's what's interesting, Paul. Not one of them has come out and said, well, you know, that IRA guy and those computer experts and so forth, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. This evidence is nothing.
Well,
what they say is one of two things. One, I can tell you've got something here, but this is just too hot to handle. I won't be reelected if I get involved
yeah.
with this.
Yeah.
Or they say, and this has been the more consistent response, House leadership said that we will not pursue this. In other words, John Boehner said, we will not pursue this. So Boehner has already put the word out that unless you want me to clip your cojones, as we say here in Texas, and you want to essentially have no power in Congress whatsoever, you better leave this issue alone. There have been congressmen who have gone to Boehner and said, I think we need to look at this, and the answer has been no. So it's not that Congress doesn't realize there is a problem. It's that Congress has been told you will not pursue this.
It is inevitable that the day is finally going to come when everybody has accumulated the real evidence and said, no, there's no way it could be an authentic document. And a couple thousand French examiners in this country, why would one of them just go down in their basement and look at it and come back with, yeah, there's problems here. I haven't done it. I don't believe any French examiner is going to do it. We went to 250 of them, called them up, kept logs, and they all said, for the most part, I do work for the government. I don't dare examine that document.
I'm aware of that, and I know you guys also went outside the United States hoping to find somebody involved, and somebody wrote back from France and said, hey, what are you trying to do, wreck your country? And I can also tell you that while you guys were doing that, I was pursuing over 200 certified Adobe experts, and we've got a handful of them that are working with the posse. But what I can tell you is that out of the 200 I wrote, only 6 wrote back, and all 6 said they didn't want to be involved.
That's all. Yeah. You'll run into that a lot.
Yeah.
I have no. I'm mainly after not Obama, but the media. If we don't have an honest media, what can we do? As really, everything is wrong than what we're being told. And this is a serious problem in America, that the media is controlled, and we're not going to hear the truth about anything if the government doesn't want us to hear it. So we're lost everywhere we look.
A lot of times Congress, Paul, is controlled by fear. And I know whenever the stimulus package was proposed, they were told, if you don't pass this thing, there are going to be riots in the street. And Republicans jumped on board and voted for it. Now, the same thing holds true with this birth certificate stuff, and there's no question that this document they've presented, this PDF file, is a joke. It looks like it was cut and pasted together by a kindergartner with school paste. You don't have to even be someone with your level of expertise to look at it and have things jump out at you as being obviously fake. But what Congress is being told in part, and we know this thanks to Paul Valley Lee, retired Major General Paul Valley Lee, who was Fox News' terrorism expert for 6 years. He started the day after 9/11 and went with them for 6 years, that people on the Hill were told, if you pursue this, you're going to see race riots from coast to coast. And I've had a number of African-American guests on my show who say it is an absolute insult to African-Americans to suggest that they would riot if Barack Obama were removed from office. The idea that if a black man were put through the system, given his fair day in court, found guilty, and then removed, that they would riot from New York to California.
Yeah, well, Herman Cain was black, and he got taken through the ringer because the media had no compunctions about mentioning that 10 years ago he made an inappropriate remark to two women in a restaurant, and therefore he's getting kicked out of contention for president. Why did the blacks riot about that? It was this guy said, hey, he's 100% black. He wants to run for president. He's qualified. He ran something, for God's sakes, the Restaurant Association, and he was running as a Republican. But, of course, media was instructed to get rid of this guy because if he's running against Obama, the black vote will be cut in half. And that massive unit black vote is what he always counted on pushing him over the top vote-wise. They dug and dug and found something. They didn't do this with Obama. I tell you 50 things they won't tell you about Obama. But he lost his law license. He lost his license to practice law. He can no longer practice law. That's why he went to Harvard. Did the media tell us that? It happened during the election year. He had to surrender his license to avoid prosecution for failing to properly fill out his application that was submitted to the Supreme Court of Illinois, where he was supposed to put in a box any other name he'd ever been known as and any other country he was a resident of. He left those boxes blank. The election caused attention to be brought to him, and it's a matter of record that his license was suspended. The media didn't tell us that.
Paul, once again, I want to apply the Palin test. If Palin were an attorney and she gave up her license to practice law, what do you think would have happened back in 2008 with the media?
It all over. It'd be front page New York Times.
One other quick point about the media before I let you go on. The media seems to have a rule that's a double standard with regard to black people. If you are Barack Obama or Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton, you know, all bets are off. You're untouchable. Leave these people alone. If you are Clarence Thomas, okay, or if you are Bill Cosby, or if you are someone else who's been even known to make conservative statements on a bait, if you're Star Parker, then it's, you know, pin your ears back and go for it. The rule about African Americans being untouchable by the media does not apply to conservative African Americans. There's a double standard. If you're a liberal African American, then you're untouchable. Nothing you do can ever be perceived as anything less than perfect, or it's racist to suggest it. But, you know, if you're a conservative black like Herman Cain, then it's okay to go after those things.
Well, Alice Palmer brought him into politics in the very beginning when he was in Illinois, and she was a communist. She had him take her place on the state senate seat. So his beginnings in politics were volunteered by, the whole thing getting him into office was generally in the background a communist ideal that we'll get. It's not about being black, it's about being communist.
Well, very, very quickly, you got about 10 minutes left.
Okay.
Let's go back to the birth certificate, because that's what you bring to the table, your expertise.
Yeah.
Typesetter. Let's go back to that birth certificate and point out a few more things that prove that it wasn't, it can't possibly be anything other.
Yeah, well, the line spacing, in all the certificates I've ever seen that came out of Hawaii was always even, because the foreman's design for Tupaika's letting, we call it, spacing from line to line on a typewriter would give you Tupaika's if you put two on the dial, and then when you pull the carriage return, you automatically go down exactly 24 points, two picas. All the birth certificates do that, except Obama's.
Mm-hmm.
Comes up short, comes up long, because the stupid forger never thought about it. I'm pasting these lines down, line per line, letter by letter. Where do I put it? Well, wherever I want, apparently. And if it doesn't line up, each line lines up with itself, but it doesn't line up with the two pipe escapements. So you have lines that are close to the form's border and lines that are further away from the form's border. And I illustrate that pretty good in this second presentation that you'll list for your listeners.
Yeah, I'm looking at the
border. They can see
line.
That. And nobody can tell me that they found a birth certificate that has irregular spacing, and that's pretty hard to call it a mechanical error, because of the way they're set up. There's a gear on the left side of all the typewriters. It's firmly affixed. It doesn't slip. And the lever that you pull when you pull your carriage return to the left causes it to jump down two and only two picas. And it varies on Obama's because it's a forgery.
Real quick, Paul, one of the things I've noticed after looking at this document is that the forger, one, wasn't very familiar with typewriters and the way typewriters worked in 1961. And the second thing is, I get the impression that they may have been younger, a younger person who never really...
Too young to have ever used a typewriter. That's correct.
That's
person
what I was
is too young to ever have used a typewriter.
I learned on a typewriter. You know, I'm about to be 50 years old. And when I look at this thing, you know, first of all, there's the absence of a left margin on Obama's birth certificate.
That's right.
as a professional typist, you know, that's the first thing you would have done as a typist at Capilani, if that's where you were, is that you would have set your typewriter's margins up
right,
so that you didn't have to reset the darn margins every single time you typed a certificate.
All those boxes on the right, the type should be lined up like it is in every other birth certificate issued. It's not, because the forger had no idea and just put the letters down willy-nilly. As long as they're in the box, who cares how far to the left or the right, or if they align? What he did do was align vertically, because everybody knows when you type a line, you pull a carriage return type, all the letters appear directly under. And that can be shown in the form of a grid. But the left side and the right side don't line up. Mm-hmm. And that's another impossibility.
Yeah, I'm looking at these lines, and it's very, very telling that they, you know, you have these letters starting in different places. Some of them are right on the line. Some of them are to the right of the line. Some of them
all the ones on the left are vertically aligned with each other, but on the right, they're not. If you put the grid over on the right, and so I show examples of normal birth certificates, and all of them always work out so that you can make a grid line all the way across the page and the letters fall properly in that.
In your expert opinion, when you look at the number of words that probably were pulled from different birth certificates that were typed by different typewriters, how many typewriters is there evidence of? I mean, are we looking at type that probably came from two typewriters, three typewriters, four typewriters?
I would think two, if all of the pickups were done, they were stealing letters from Capilani certificates. They could have had too much variety there. Maybe there was a mix-up and some certificate from another hospital was used. I don't know. No one can know that. We just know that all these letters don't belong on the same document because they don't match.
How many birth certificates from Capilani from that time period have you personally examined?
Probably a couple dozen.
Okay. So you're pretty familiar with what this thing should have looked like in 1960.
Yeah, well, we made a specimen, and that's included in the second example I emailed you. Well, we made a specimen to show what the document should have looked like if it was actually typed on a typewriter. Because
gotcha.
We typed it on, I myself bought a Olivetti Underwood from the early 60s to do research with. It's in perfect condition. Another major problem is that few people realize, unless they're a typist, when you used to type and you type a little too fast, sometimes two keys would get stuck next to each other just before they struck, and you had to pull them apart manually. And in so doing, you would tend to bend one of those letters because they're on long arms. And then thereafter, the letter would type as a bent letter. But you could take a pair of pliers and straighten it out.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's on the same document, you're not going to bother doing that. We have both straight cap H's on the Obama birth certificate and a few tilted cap H's. And there's a common mistake that the forger made, not realizing that that goes on at all. This is a well-established forensic study of typewriters. It can always identify any typewriter by particular, even minor bends to the left and the right, that no two typewriters would come out with all the letters perfectly straight because they were so easy to bend. And we have that on the Obama certificate. That alone proves a forgery. You can't have a straight H type. The name Hossein at the top of the page has a tilted H. It's clearly tilted to the right. But right below that on the next line is Honolulu. It's perfectly straight. That can't happen with a typewriter. They don't just type bent and then they type straight.
Well, you know, we had, again, Carl Denninger is a computer expert. Typewriters are a hobby for him. But one of the things he pointed out that meshes perfectly with what you're saying here, and I always love it when my experts agree, is that you either have to believe that this document is fake, or you have to believe that they kept pulling it out of one typewriter and putting it into another and then taking it back, and sometimes within the same word switching typewriters. I mean, it's ridiculous. How can anybody even suggest that, well, maybe they took it out of the typewriter and put it back in another typewriter? And I mean, that's just lunacy.
No, it never would have been done.
No, of course not. And that's the kind of crap, frankly, excuse my language, but that's...
What else have they got? They have to say something. They're paid to make blogs that ridicule people who claim it's forgery.
Well, let me just say this too, and I'm gonna summarize this because I don't wanna aim at anyone specifically. generally speaking, most, not all, but most of the Obots that I've encountered are either very, very stupid, or they are doing a damned good job at pretending to be. These are people, of course, that's why they all use fake names, is because if you're going to, I mean, essentially, if you're going to go online and make an ass out of yourself and say, well, Obama's got this magic scanner that no one's ever seen before. Yeah, right. Maybe he's got one that serves soft ice cream, too. Or maybe he's got another scanner that's a time machine. Sure, why not? But, or if you're going to go in there and say that someone took the paper out of a typewriter and put it back in a different typewriter and all this crap, if you're going to sit there and look like a contortionist playing a game of Twister because you're bending over backwards so much to try to connect the dots and make a complete ass out of yourself on the internet, you wouldn't want to use your real name. These people are out there doing anything they can to raise doubt.
They're committing a crime. You can't support a felony and not be an accessory after the fact. And they're supporting a felony by making all kinds of ridiculous claims that it's not a felony, it's a real birth certificate. They're going to go away when all this finally is realized. The evidence that's been presented can't be refuted. It hasn't been refuted. I dare anybody to refute it. Come back to me and say, you're wrong about this, you're wrong about that, and debate it with me, especially if you're a typographer or a certified examiner or you have experience working with Macintosh computers, all three of which I have 26 years from the very beginning of Macintosh. I've worked with it. And Photoshop, I worked with that since I had it as a beta test in December of 89 before anybody else had it. And I was working with that unsharp mask right away. The day the PDF was filed and I saw the white outline, I said, that's an unsharp mask. What's it doing here on a document from 1961? The only birth certificate you're ever going to find with a white outline around all the letters is Barack Obama's. And you must ask yourself, why?
Yeah.
Because the forger flattened all the layers and applied an unsharp mask to bring the sharpness back. And this put a white outline. I did it in the example they'll see attached. Showing beyond any doubt that exactly you get the same look when you apply an unsharp mask. When you print something on green paper, where did the white come from?
Oh, exactly.
How can they claim that they put the document in the copy machine and print it to green paper? All the black letters, all the black should have just printed against the green with no outline at all. But there's an outline. Why? Because they lie. They never took any document out of any book and put it in their copy machine and copied to the green paper. The green paper was already in the document, assembled and flattened as a layer, and that's why the white got there. And no one can ever demonstrate how they can make that white appear. Some say, well, you keep reproducing something in the white. I've been reproducing for 57 years. And none of my customers ever said, oh, this is a Xerox and there's problems with it. No, the Xeroxes were damn good. Plus the art directors in New York City wouldn't allow, they'd say, move this letter over a point. We're supposed to see that on a Xerox, and we do. And nobody contends then that the proof that they got back wasn't moved a point. We could see all those things. They contend that because you copy something once, it gets all screwed up, and it doesn't.
Well, you know, Paul, this is where common sense comes in. You take Susan Daniels. She's been a private investigator for more than a couple of decades. When you look at Barack Obama's Social Security Administration records, right there in the birthday box, you have the year 1890 in addition to She said she has literally looked, you know, just like you've looked at tens of thousands of documents, she's looked at thousands of Social Security Administration records, and not once has there been an additional number in that birthday box. Only in Barack Obama's. Wow, what a coincidence. Then you look at his Selective Service Registration card. Every other postal stamp we've ever examined has four digits in it. Okay? His only has two.
Yeah,
and the eight is upside down.
Lieutenant Zulu. found that. They took away,
turned it upside down and made 8-0. He is the only person with two digits in a postal stamp. Again,
That's one of those amazing
coincidences that only involves Barack Obama. Now, let's fast forward to his literary agent. They put out a booklet every year listing their authors. He is listed in that book as being Kenyan-born. Now, the people immediately came out under pressure and said, well, he never told us he was Kenyan-born. Everybody else that's been contacted that's in that book has said they had to sign off on a proof every year. Who in the hell goes to print with something without having a proof signed off on it? And here you go again. You look at this birth certificate, and you're pointing out all these things that have only been seen in Barack Obama's birth certificate. So either it's a coincidence that his Social Security Administration records have an extra birth date, or that his Selective Service card is missing two digits in the post stamp, or that his literary agent asked everybody to sign a proof every year except for him, and that his birth certificate contains all these things that no other birth certificates contain. Either this guy has had the worst damned luck in the world when it comes to every major document key to supporting his life narrative having some kind of major screw-up in it, or they've all been forged. I'm going to go with the common sense side and say that more than likely all his documents have been either altered or forged. I refuse to believe that one man has gone through his life with every single damned public document he has having some kind of a major error in it that no other document from that administration has been known to have. You know, it's just, you either have common sense or you don't. This is like the emperor's new clothes. I mean, either you can tell the damn guy is naked or you can't. And if you say he's got clothes on, you're lying your ass off. I mean, it's ridiculous. And I get worked up when I talk about it because we now have the equivalent of a state-run media. I didn't need you to verify that for me with your stories. I appreciate you doing that. I want to make it clear. But who in the hell hadn't already figured that out? With Barack Obama in the White House, it might as well be Russia. It might as well be Nazi Germany in terms of the press.
That's very troubling. It's very troubling that the Secret Service knows that his birth certificate's not legitimate, and apparently told my friend so, who then changed his whole view about Obama. It's very troubling that Doug Vogt filed charges with the FBI in Seattle against the points of forgery, and the FBI said we're working on it, but they haven't done a thing. They just have to go from their office in Honolulu up the street and say, let's have a look at that original, and it's all over. Obama would be arrested in a sane world, because what they'd have to show is a computer printout, not a 1961 document. They can't show the original. The original is a fraud. It was just introduced to the world. I like to say that that birth certificate did not get within 50 years of a real typewriter. Prove me wrong. Prove me real wrong. It's just impossible. And I've got the experience and the knowledge to declare it, and I've got the reputation that some people say I don't have to lay on the line and say, I'm a graphic arts expert, and I'm saying that that document is a complete forgery. Bring me a forensic examiner, or bring me a typographer that can find any way of certifying it as authentic and convince me that's going to be a miracle. It is a forgery. And that's a crime that raises to the level of high treason, because it got an illegal alien elected president. You know, we got at least 22 points, hard points of proof of forgery. But since the media touch it, we feel we're going to have to publish a book. We'll be lucky if we're able to do that. And if we do, and finally Americans realize, gee, you can't controvert this, it's actually a forgery, what are we going to do about it? And hopefully the FBI would finally say, yes, we're going to press charges. But you're not going to do that with Holder.
Paul, we've gone over on time. We didn't begin to scratch the surface. We're going to have your co-author on next week, Doug Vogt, and then we're going to have you back again to pick up where we left off.
Fine, anytime.
All right, Paul, it's been an absolute honor having you on the show. Take care, and I wish you the very best of luck with your upcoming book and your endeavors to see that justice is eventually done in the case of Barack Obama.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar.